Welcome back to Who's There. I'm your host, Allison. If you're new here, thank you for joining us. This is a podcast where I talk to a new horror fan every week because I hope to destigmatize what it means to be a horror movie fan. Because most of us are just regular people who like the adrenaline rush of being scared for some reason, and here we delve into those reasons. This week, I got to chat with Brandon Christensen. He's the writer and director of Superhost, a new movie to hit Shudder on September 2nd, about a couple of vloggers who get more than they bargained for from their host at a Airbnb who is listed as a super host, which I didn't know what that was until I watched this movie, so maybe you don't either. But I watched this movie last Saturday and I loved it, and I reached out to Brandon immediately to see if I could get him to come on the show, and he said yes. He's a dad of two currently living in Las Vegas, and we talked about the inspiration behind Superhost, as well as his other two movies, Z and Stillborn, and how creepy kids are the worst. If you've seen Z, you'll get this. He revealed his all-time favorite horror movie, which horror movie he'd love to remake, the horror movie he'll never watch again, and where he'll be filming his next movie in just a few weeks, hopefully. One last thing before we get into this episode. If you love the show and haven't left us a review on iTunes yet, I'd be so grateful if you could take a second to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and subscribe to our feed wherever you listen to us. Thank you to everyone who's already left us a review. It's so appreciated as it really helps people find us. I think that's it. So let's get into this episode with Brandon Christensen. Hey, Brandon, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for being here. As I told you when I emailed you yesterday, I guess it was, or the night before, I watched your newest film, Superhost, on Saturday night, and I absolutely loved it.
Thank you.
It was well-paced, super creepy, and it had me on the edge of my seat for the entirety of it. Do you want to start by telling everyone a little bit about yourself first?
Sure. My name is Brandon Christensen. Superhost was my third feature film that I directed and wrote. It's the first script that I wrote by myself, which was an interesting experience. My last two films, Stillborn and Z, they're both on Shudder as well. So I've got three films up on there. But yeah, I live in Las Vegas and I'm from Canada originally. So I've been here, I think, 14 years now, which is bizarre to me that I've, you know, you just kind of show up in the desert and you get lost. But I've just been trying to hustle and make these horror movies now so I can scare people. And it's, you know, it's working out so far. It's fun.
Awesome. Can I ask how you ended up in Las Vegas, of all places, from Canada?
Yeah, I was living in Toronto. That's where I went to school. And I was trying to do like music videos and stuff like that and just failing miserably. So I was kind of just bartending when I was out there. And then my sister lived in Vegas at the time, which she still does. But she was just like, yeah, why don't you come and visit? I wasn't really doing anything. So I flew down, and I have a dual citizenship because my dad's American. And she just said, yeah, I've got a friend that's looking for, you know, her production assistant at this corporate video house. And I was just like, great, I'll go have an interview. And then I did, and they hired me. So I was just like, oh, like I have a job in another country now, and I live in Toronto. So I was just like, I guess I'm just gonna move. So I pretty much just packed everything up and moved to Vegas, and, you know, spent a couple of years at that place just sort of working my way up. And then just got to the point where I was just not interested in that, and I, you know, went out on my own. So I've just sort of been, you know, freelancing, directing. I did corporate stuff, commercials, music videos for a while. And now I've kind of, films pretty much just taken over now.
Nice. That's so interesting. So first things first, what's your favorite scary movie?
I get this question every time, and every time it stumps me because it's just like, what's your favorite movie? I feel like horror is such a broad genre that it's hard to pick because I like things for different reasons. So what I kind of boil it down to is sort of impact, and what, you know, when I watched it, the experience and the viewing experience, what impacted me most. And, I mean, ignoring the fact that I saw it when I was 6 years old, I would say that the Blair Witch Project, the original, that had the biggest impact because I was in Langley, British Columbia with my cousin's house, and they somehow got tickets to a pre-release screening at midnight. And so me and him went, I think it was the summer going into the ninth grade. And I didn't know what it was. No, none of us did. Like, there was news reports about how this thing was real. We looked it up online, but, and this was like, you know, before viral marketing was a thing. So they kind of started it. So we were looking at this website and just being like, what is this? And we 100% believed this was a real film when we went to it. So I'm like 13, 14 years old, went to this film at midnight. We watched it, and it was just like, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I thought it was real. And I was just like, there's got to be an explanation for it, but I couldn't figure it out. So I went home and it was, you know, almost 2 o'clock and I just couldn't sleep. I was just so scared of that final shot where Mike's standing in the corner and you're just like, you know, all the information. It's not a jump out thing or anything like that. It's just information that you've accumulated just by listening to them talk and learning about the witch and stuff like that. And it's just like the perfect ending. And so I just remember just sobbing my eyes out because I couldn't sleep. I was so scared. And so, I mean, I don't like, it doesn't have that impact on me now, but at the time and when I saw it, it was just, you know, it was horror just, you know, turned up to a million.
Oh, that's super cool. Yeah. I remember the marketing campaign and I reloaded that website every day.
Right.
Too, it's crazy. Looking for updates. It was so cool. No movie has done anything like that since I think Cloverfield.
Yeah. That was pretty big too. Cause they you didn't know what it was. It was like news reports out of Japan and like an oil thing, you know, a platform drilling station thing goes under. Yeah. It was, that was cool too. But yeah, I think just everybody's become so cynical now with the internet that you can't trick people anymore. So everyone's just gonna be like, oh, that's BS. You know, you can just reach out to Japan people there and they're like, oh no, that's not true. You know, it's just so easy to, you know, spoil something or ruin the effect. So yeah, it was definitely like a product of its era for sure.
Yeah. Awesome. So how did you first fall in love with the horror genre?
Well, it's kind of like a lifelong thing. When I was, when I was in kindergarten, the Stephen King miniseries, It came out. And for some reason, my parents let me watch it. And it was another one of those deep impact things where I had nightmares for years and years. This kind of perennial nightmare of, Pennywise was living in my closet. And at night, my brother and I would let him out and we would, you know, have to sort of get him back in there. And it was just, you know, terrifying Pennywise stuff. But that was just that feeling of being scared ends up being something that you're kind of chasing, you know? So it's like, it's like almost like a high, you know, like, so when I'd have friends over, we'd watch scary movies and then we would go out and walk in the night and just like go through alleyways and just try and hype each other up. Just be like, oh man, imagine if Michael Myers came out of that gate right there. That'd be so scary. What would you do? And you're just like building each other up and you know, there's nothing going to happen, but you're sixth grade, whatever, you're just scaring yourselves and you just be, you know, so it just becomes just sort of a thing. That's just like part of your life is just having this kind of battle with being scared or not. And just like watching horror films in general, just growing up every Halloween, we would watch one as a family. And I think, you know, when you watch something like The Shining, and I think I was in like seventh grade or something, but I was sitting beside my mom and every time there's a scary part, she would grab me, cover my eyes, and I would hear the music and I would hear the screams and I would hear all the rustling of the people that were watching with us, but I didn't see it. So all of a sudden your mind starts filling in the blanks. And ultimately what you're going to imagine, like, holy crap, this is terrifying my parents and everything. Like, what could it possibly be, you know, because that's who you look up to. So that was just, you know, I think building the imaginative side of it where you're just like, you know, you intuitively start thinking of what's worst case scenario situations and just sort of building on that. And then when, you know, when I was a little bit older and out of film school, I started dabbling in short films. And I feel like horror is just it's a great medium for a genre for short films because they're usually built around a gag, you know, so you can just build something pretty short and ultimately the gag is all that matters. It's just like how you build to it. So I was kind of playing around with different shorts and trying to find my voice and everything. And it just felt right to me, I think.
Awesome. So this is something I ask everyone. Why do you think that people who seem perfectly sane love this genre?
It's probably because it's a release, you know, like it's nice to, you know, people tend to bottle things up and they tend to, you know, put aside, they don't want to have conflicts or something like that. So it's kind of cathartic to allow these, you know, victims on screen or something to take out some of that aggression. I don't know. I mean, it is funny because when you go to like film festivals or things like that, and you meet, you know, legit horror fans, like they're always the sweetest people, you know, and then they watch the most dark things. And it's just kind of, there's this weird contrast with it. That's it's pretty funny to see, but I don't know. I think it's just stuff that you can't see. I'm sure part of it is that high that people are chasing. Like you kind of go from, you know, Night of the Living Dead, and then you kind of work your way into more and more. And as you know, our sensibilities as a culture and everything changes, the way that horror films do things is different. You know, like James Wan kind of kicked off the whole the house horror stuff that I've been kind of playing into with Insidious. And it just sort of became a thing that people just, I don't know. It just, I think the thing that I, about horror and comedies is that it's the only genres that have like a really reactive property to it. Like you can't, you can watch a drama, but you're not just going to be shocked and cry. You're not going to be like, oh my gosh, you know, crying. You have to build the characters and you have to get there. But with horror or comedy, you have a laugh that, or like, you know, a joke that plays or a jump that plays and it affects you and it has that feeling. So I think it's just fun to kind of get, have that feeling of being jolted, being surprised, being anxious. Like I remember watching Green Room and it was, you know, that was the most edge of my seat film I've ever seen. I was just sitting there like, I don't know what's going to happen. It was so terrifying, just like, cause it's so real and it's so awful and everything goes out horribly and everything. And it was just, you know, it's just that feeling that you get that isn't really safe to get anywhere else.
Yeah, that's a great answer. I recently rewatched Green Room. It's such a good movie.
So good.
What would you say is your favorite subgenre in horror?
I don't know. I do like the supernatural kind of, I mean, I don't know. That's a tough one. Cause I mean, it's like the James Wan stuff, The Conjuring stuff. It's a pretty solid bet for me that I'll enjoy that. Cause I like things like Paranormal Activity and films that are kind of like taking the reality that I have, which is, you know, married parent of three and kind of just, you know, taking your safety net, which is your house or your apartment, whatever it is. And just sort of, just like penetrating it with something that you can't control and it kind of just throws everything into chaos. Like that's such a, I remember when I saw Paranormal Activity in the theaters, I went alone because my wife doesn't like horror. And when I got home, she wasn't home and she was out with her mom or something and it was dark and I'm just like in the house and it's quiet and every kind of creak you hear, it's just, you know, you're on this hyper alert thing. And it's just, I really enjoy slashers and things like that. I think that those realistic things, even if it is a supernatural entity or whatever, just it kind of perverting your sense of security at home, I think is those are the most affecting for me.
Yeah, I love the Paranormal Activity movies. Mm-hmm.
I think it's five, but it might be six.
I think seven is coming out next year. So jeez. Yeah, are you looking forward to Malignant? That's a new James Wan movie.
Yeah, no, it looks great. I mean, it definitely has a lot of similarities to Z. Like it has the imaginary friend component. It has the home video component where she's talking to her friend. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that I should be getting a check in the mail, but you know, I think James Wan's so talented. I'm excited for him to go back into that kind of the smaller stories and not doing, you know, the bigger kind of DC things that he's been doing. It looks incredible. I mean, just he's such a visionary from the horror perspective, just sort of ramping up what he's doing in the style and some of the VFX that they're doing with, like, I don't know, it doesn't really show that much in the trailer, but like the world is changing around. I'm assuming it's like a flashback structure. I don't know. But I think he's just so innovative. He kind of created this whole subgenre, and even like Saw, you know, he kind of created that torture porn thing. I'm totally game. That's definitely going to be a theater movie for me because, you know, he's just so talented.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be really visually stunning with the, like, the pouring, like, melting down the walls.
Like melting, yeah.
Yeah. I just booked my tickets for that with my friends on Saturday. So nice. I'm excited.
That's cool. You're in New York? Sorry?
I'm in New York City, yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Luckily, we still have our theaters open, so... Cool. Do you have any favorite horror directors or ones that you say influenced you the most?
James Wan is a big one. You know, I think that just what he's created, and he just kind of keeps re-innovating new things for horror. David F. Sandberg's I'm a fan of his, not because, you know, his movies I think are the best in the world, but just him as a person and the way he presents himself online, like he is all about having fun, and like he makes all these YouTube videos on his Pony Smasher account, and they're, you know, it's just so bizarre to have a Hollywood director who got his start on YouTube continue to feed his fan, you know, to feed his channel with content that is like, here's me dissecting the trailer and showing you in it, and he's just so open and in depth about everything. It's so fascinating. And I like the fact that he kind of does VFX for himself, not on the bigger stuff, but he kind of came up in that world. So he's just, you know, it's just someone that I think can do it all himself. Like, he does these short films still, and he does everything. And it's always just so impressive. Mike Flanagan, I think, is, you know, he's kind of, you know, swings for the fences a lot and usually hits a homer. Like, Oculus is incredible.
Yeah.
The house, The Haunting of Hill House was amazing. I'm looking forward to Mass, Sunday Mass, which comes out soon on Netflix. Yeah. And I mean, and Dr. Sleep was super cool. I mean, he's just, he does things that I like, where it's, you have a horror film that's super dark and everything, but it has kind of an emotional element to it, like a family, or it has this key component to it that makes you care about the characters, makes you, you know, makes you feel something. And I think that's really important. Like, Z is a film that I put a lot of personal details into and stuff. And so it's that stuff, when you can tell that it's not just like, you know, these characters have reality in them, I think it's pretty, you know, it's nice to watch.
Yeah, definitely. One of my friends just started watching The Haunting of Hill House for the first time. He had never watched it before. And he's like, this is really tough to watch. We're like, it doesn't get better. So just buckle
up. I mean, the bent neck lady episode alone, it's just, you know, you take this character that they did it with the brother too, where there's just like, they seem like such crappy people. And then they just show you more context. And so you're not viewing them through this kind of vacuum anymore. You've got these context pieces that make you care about them. And then they have the most horrible things happening to them. And it's just like, that's such a, I think that's so good. If you can care about the characters on screen, it's super important.
Definitely. So an article came out last year in June or July that said that horror movie fans were handling lockdown better than non-horror movie fans. Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I did see that article. I think part of it is because they, like, the genre is so broad that there's so much to see. And I think that, honestly, like, Shudder, I think that they exist, and them existing, being a horror content provider, I think that just makes it easy to find stuff to watch too. Like, you know, you go on Netflix and you just get overwhelmed by the choices, whereas you go on Shudder and you're just like, okay, I'm gonna watch a horror film, and that's all that they're giving you. You know, there's some fringe stuff, but in general, it's just this one thing. And you don't see that with, like, comedy and drama and stuff like that. And I think probably horror fans are a little bit more nihilistic, and they like that, you know, they kind of, they've seen it so many times. You know, how many zombie movies have they seen that parallel what was happening? And it's just like, you know, you kind of get excited, but you just like, you're like, I know I've seen this, and you kind of draw parallels, and I'm going to watch more. And I think it's probably just like, they've seen the worst of different things. So it's kind of interesting for them to have that comparison, maybe.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely plausible. So I watched Z today, and I have to ask, where did the idea come from for this movie? You said you have three kids. Did you ever have one that had an imaginary friend that was kind of creeping you out?
So my oldest son, there was a point in time, it was very short, but he would come to us and say that he was scared of the girl in the closet with green eyes. And it ended up being a thing that he saw in a video game. But, you know, there was just that was just kind of like this first thing where it was just like, well, I know there's not anything there. He doesn't know that there's nothing there, you know, and it's hard to communicate that with, like, a 6-year-old. They don't really understand the idea of fake, 'cause they've seen it, so they think it's real. But the big germ of the idea came from when it was his first day of kindergarten. And it was that moment where you kind of drop him off and you walk away. And it's, you know, it's kind of just this emotional moment where it's like, oh, this is like such a, he's been at our house, you know, maybe he'll go to preschool for like once or twice a week, but now it's Monday to Friday. He's gone for 7-8 hours. The house feels very empty. It's just different. And so he starts coming home and he's got drawings. He's got things. Hey, guess what I learned? He's got things that all of a sudden we're not in control of anymore. And my wife and I were just sort of talking about that. And my wife dropped the idea of an imaginary friend. And we just sort of, we were up late one night and just sort of discussing this idea of like, what if this kid, you know, what if our kid brought home an imaginary friend and it was telling him to do things and we couldn't control him because he was listening only to that. It's like, it's hard to get through to a kid. You know, you can get mad at them, you can yell at them, you can ground them, whatever. But ultimately, if you're dealing against their imagination, it's such like a vague thing. You can't really beat that because it's always there. So it just sort of snowballed from that. And we just sort of just, you know, kept building and building on it. And then the idea of it being Beth's imaginary friend all of a sudden became like, oh, that's a cool hook to, you know, reveal later and stuff. And it just sort of kept building from that.
Yeah, I really liked it. It was so creepy.
Yeah, it's different.
Yeah. Yeah. Creepy kids are the worst.
Yes, they are.
So I said on Twitter, I think yesterday, that I don't stay at Airbnbs when I travel, and Superhost just cemented that for me. Mm-hmm. How did you come up with the idea for Superhost?
I was doing a film festival in Toronto, and I was staying in an Airbnb that I booked for the festival, and it was a really nice place. It was like a condo kind of thing downtown. I hadn't been there in a while, so I wanted to just sort of, you know, get a nice place and enjoy it. And I got there from the airport, and I used the restroom, and when I was trying to flush it, it didn't work. And so I was just like looking, you know, open the tank, looking in it, all the stuff, look for a plunger. There's nothing there. And I'm just like, oh crap. So I write the host a message, and he, through a series of events, he ends up having to come with a plunger and fixing it for me. And I mean, the whole setup with that Airbnb, some of them you meet the person, they let you in, but most of them now they're all automated. Like they give you a keypad code, you do the thing, and there's really no personal interaction. It's just, you're going into this person's space and you leave, and then, you know, it's over. But in this case, he had to come and he had to fix something for me, and we're having this small talk, and it's like so awkward. I could be anyone. He could be anyone. It's just, we know nothing about each other other than the fact that I'm paying him to sleep in a bed that he owns, you know? So it was just this weird kind of creepy feeling that was, I was, you know, trying to make jokes and small talk, and he leaves. And then I was just sort of left with this impression like, man, that was so weird, you know? And then finally, soon after that, I saw the movie Creep, and I just sort of fell in love with the idea of this antagonist that you love to watch kill people, you know, and just, you love for them to torment these people, and you just love to see, just sort of see the creepiness, but, you know, kind of revel in it and enjoy it. So I was like, you know, I kind of put these two ideas together. I was like, well, what if we had this host that was a, you know, a psychopath, and, but they were just so lovable that you could have a movie that they're the villain, but you end up rooting for them. And so it kind of just, you know, once I was putting that together, but I was like, well, who is going to stay with them? You know, can't you, you know, we're just random couple. I don't know how I fell into the idea of a social media, like a YouTube vlog duo, but it just sort of added some layers to it, where it's like all these people are presenting themselves in ways that they aren't actually, like everybody's lying to everybody. And it's just putting on these best faces. And then when you're alone, it's, you know, you just turn it off. And I thought that was really interesting. So yeah, it was just kind of, once that happened, you know, the story just kind of evolved.
I spoke with Jeffrey Reddick last year, who wrote the Final Destination movies, and he was talking about how movies with small casts in one location were now being coined as pandemic friendly movies. And I know you said you filmed this in October of last year. So was it easy to sell the idea of Superhost to a production company?
I mean, this was entirely independent. Like I wrote it, directed it, raised the funds and everything. So it was very, you know, it was very small. I mean, the idea and all the things, they started pre-pandemic, but as, you know, as I was kind of finishing up the script, I definitely made choices with the script to keep it very isolated to this one spot. Probably just to keep the scope and just keep everything small, because we needed, there was a lot of hoops to jump through. When you're dealing with like SAG and the unions and the masking and there's a ton of costs that you don't typically have in a feature film. Like 10 to 15% of your budget is just gone for all of these things. And when you've already got a small budget, that hurts. So you've all of a sudden, you know, that's three or four positions on the set, like an assistant director or anything, that we had to cut. And so we had very small crew. So we just had to keep the scope really low. So when I found another house up there first, and I wrote the script around that. And I had met the owner and everything, scouted it. And he thought, but then he kind of bailed on me and just stopped responding to emails. And I was just like, crap, I'm probably gonna have to, it's so hard to find a house that's willing to let you shoot for a month. And I've had good luck with it on my first two films, but I wasn't sure how that would work here. So I reached out to a friend who I knew had a place up there, and she's like, oh yeah, I'm here right now. And she took photos for me. And I was like, I'm jumping in my car, I'm on my way. And I just drove up there, and her whole family was there. And they, I've known them since I moved here. And we just sort of sat and chatted about what we were doing. And the pandemic was just about to start. This was like March. And we just sort of had this really nice conversation about it. And they're just like, yeah, for sure. Just come and shoot. That's totally fine. And so we didn't know what was going to happen and when we could shoot it, but I just sort of kept them updated on that. Yeah, I mean, it is by its very nature a pandemic film because of when we shot it, but I think it works, you know, either way. I don't think like Shutter or anything cared about that. I mean, they probably had less content coming in that they were able to get, but ultimately it's just, you know, it is what it is.
So I have to ask, at what point, if you were staying at that Airbnb, would you have left the house?
Well, see, me, I'm a little bit different than these two vlogging duos who, you know, I feel like Teddy's kind of the beta of the two, and she's kind of forcing him to do stuff. Like he's kind of reluctant through a lot of these things. So I think that he's giving her space to kind of continue to push him, because he's got this other plan that he wants to do too. Like he doesn't want to leave before his big surprise that he's got planned for her. So mm-hmm. I think that those things definitely keep them from wanting to leave. I mean, Rebecca doesn't really do anything bad until she stops him in the road and they go off together. Before that, it's just like, she's weird. She's kind of creepy. She's aggressively nice. So it's just like, yeah, she's a little invasive and making breakfast and stuff like that. But I don't know. I mean, it's tough to say. I mean, if you just look at it from Claire's point of view, she's like, you know, she's seeing dollar signs when she sees this girl. And Osric, he's seeing her being happy, and he's seeing her being, he's seeing her like, you know, sort of totally distracted from the fact that he's got this big proposal set up. So I think that they're just so distracted, and they don't realize the fact that this, what they're doing, can hurt people. You know, they're not invincible. You know, they are putting themselves in these positions, but they're just so blind to the fact that, you know, they've got their screens, they're totally obsessed with these things that, they're just sort of missing what's right in front of them. So me personally, I don't know. I mean, again, it's just like once that forest happened, then that's when you're bailing. But, until then she was just weird and awkward. I mean, I, you know, you deal with people and you don't know their background or their history. You don't know. So it's, I mean, what, I don't know. I'd be excited to get free pancakes though.
I would take going to a diner for free pancakes to not have the host of my Airbnb be showing up unannounced in the morning.
Yeah, and it's not ideal for sure.
Yeah, I'll put in a spoiler alert back when we started talking about it, because I would have been gone after the first night when Osric comes down and I think he sees like eyes or something.
Yeah, so sees her, sees someone watching. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I would have been out.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I stay in the next most terrifying place from horror movies when I travel. I stay in hostels. So
oh, there you go.
I shouldn't really talk, but I've never watched.
Way worse.
I've never watched Hostel. So I never will.
Yeah, it's good. You should watch it.
How has the response to Superhost been since it was released last week?
It's been cool. I mean, I kind of have two movies that came out during the pandemic now, because Z came out last May. And the response to this one has been a lot grander than when Z came out. Like I don't know if what changed, but just like the social media activity alone has been really fascinating to watch, because it's kind of endless. It's just sort of a loop of people watching, and it's just a different kind of movie, where I think Z is not something you want to revisit because it's just very dark and it makes you feel like crap, and it's just like, you know, there, it's kind of just tugs on the heartstrings in the wrong way. Whereas Superhost was built to be more fun and lively, and, you know, people watch things like Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street all the time because they've got these larger than life villains that that kind of chew through these people, and they're just fun, you know, it's just really fun to turn on and stuff like that. And so the response has just been interesting with how much people enjoy Rebecca. I mean, that was always the goal. I wanted to hit that kind of Joseph from Creep and Creep 2. But yeah, it's just cool to see that something, you know, a character that has been created as, you know, there's fan art, there's all these things happening, that it's just kind of cool to see how passionate people have been about it. And Yeah, I don't know. It's just been it's been different just because of the scope of everything. Like, it just seems like a lot more people are watching, which is fun.
Nice. Are there any plans for a sequel?
You know, when I wrote this, I didn't have any plans for a sequel. I mean, there's some tiny hints as to where Rebecca came from, but I never really thought, you know, like Z and Stillborn, you would get people being like, you got to make a sequel. It's such like a franchise because you've got a marketable demon entity type thing that you can actually work with. And this I thought was kind of just like its own thing, buttoned up, wrapped up. But everybody, like, it's shocking how many people are like, we need a sequel or a prequel. We need more Rebecca. We need more Rebecca. So that's been new. I mean, it's definitely gotten my gears turning a little bit because, you know, I loved working on this and I loved working with Gracie on it and just sort of, creating this character together. It would be fun to kind of explore it more, but, I don't know. It would be, I would totally be down for it if the people wanted it enough.
Well, hopefully they do. Do you have any ideas in store for your next movie not related to Superhost?
Yeah, so my brother and I have been writing some scripts together now, and we have one that's it's a really cool kind of a campus horror film. We're just kind of in the process of waiting for financing on it right now. So there is a chance, like, we've got a schedule and a budget outline and everything. There is a chance that I would be leaving next month to go shoot it in Serbia, but we're just sort of waiting to see right now. Cause it's just, things always move slow when you're, you know, I'm so used to producing and raising funds myself, or at least with the producers that I'm working with, there's a lot more layers here, and it's just, you know, so it's kind of, everything kind of goes through the one person, goes to the next person, goes to the next person. And then the information travels back the same speed. So it's just been a little bit different. So yeah, I've got that. And then my brother and I have a couple other projects that they're like backup things that we would like to do. But yeah, I mean, I've got a few things that I would love to do whenever. I just want to see we'll see what pops first.
Awesome. Well, we'll be on the lookout. Serbia seems like it's like a hop in place to film movies. I know Don't Breathe 2 was filmed there.
Which was?
Don't Breathe 2.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah. The new Hellraiser with David Bruckner, he just shot there too, apparently. So yeah, I think the producer of the film that I'm working on, Matt Mangerides, I don't know how to say his name, but he shot Castle Freak there. He produced that. And so he's just very familiar with it. I'm used to either, like, we shot Superhost in Vegas or just outside of Vegas. And my other two films I shot in Canada. So I'm kind of very unfamiliar with the whole Serbian idea, but I've looked at how far the dollar goes. I don't know if you've seen the movie Euro Trip.
Yes.
You know, when they go to, they're in Eastern yes. Europe and everyone, and he's like, he tips the bellhop with a nickel. And then yes. And the guy's like, oh, a nickel. And he slaps his manager. I start my own hotel. Yeah, it's not that unrealistic. So I definitely saw the reason why they do it, because you can just, there's so much access for lower budget stuff, you know? So I don't know why Hollywood's doing it, but I mean, they've sent me a location lookbook and stuff like that. And I'm like, wow, it's super cinematic there. So awesome. It definitely looks like a place that you could shoot a cool film in. So I'd be excited to go. It'd be weird to leave for a couple months to Eastern Europe, but it is what it is.
Yeah. When I went to Budapest a couple of years ago, I took out by accident, because the way they list their currency on their ATMs is very confusing. Right. It's like there's a comma instead of a period. So okay. I accidentally took out 100,000 forint. And right. I'm like, oh my God. And then I looked on my bank account and it was like $400. Yeah. I was like, oh, I'm rich here.
My own hotel.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. I love that movie.
Yeah.
So you have kids. Are they old enough to start enjoying horror yet? Do any of them watch horror with you?
No, not yet. I've got I tried getting my oldest one to read Goosebumps and he wasn't really loving it. My middle one just read his first Goosebumps book. and that was kind of cool. But, yeah, not really. I did make some short films with them last year just because I was kind of cooped up and waiting to shoot Superhost. So I shot a couple of little short films with them. And I tried showing them unfinished versions of it and they did not like it. Like they, you know, they got very scared about it. So it was, I don't think they're ready yet. I kind of, you know, it's been kind of challenging because of the whole pandemic thing. Like my oldest is in fourth grade now. And like, it's hard to make friends when you're stuck at home. Like they did all of last year digitally or over Zoom. And then half of the year before, what year is it?
No, yeah, it was, last year would have been the first year.
Yeah, it would have been in March last year until May. And then all of last, because it's September now. So all of third grade was online. And the last month or so of second grade was online. And that was his first year at the school. So it's just been, he hasn't really made the friends. And I feel like horror films are such a social thing that you kind of get in and you find, because you're not supposed to watch them. And I think that's part of the allure when you're a kid. Like, you know, hey, I saw this movie where this guy, you know, does, you know, whatever it is, you just have that. It's like a little secret thing that you're hiding from your parents. And he just doesn't have that right now. So I don't know. Hopefully it'll be cool when they're teenagers and they want to watch something and their friends come over and they're like, oh, my dad made these. That'll be a really cool thing.
Yeah. So how do you decide what horror movie to watch when you're looking for a horror movie to watch? Just not for any project, just you're relaxing.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, I'm working on films a lot. I don't see everything as they come out. So I usually have a pretty good backlog. I read Reddit and they're the horror subreddit there and stuff. So they're always kind of talking and I'm kind of, you know, like things like The Empty Man that came out and I haven't seen it yet. I bought it. I just need to find time. The biggest problem is my wife doesn't watch horror. So when we have those times when we can watch, and it's like, hey, let's put the kids down, watch a movie. Typically it'll be something that she, you know, is wife friendly, and horror is a no-go there. So I have to watch them solo. A lot of the times when I'm doing like VFX on films, I'll be watching movies in the background because VFX are very, they're just kind of a mindless thing that you can tune out. It's just a lot of clicking and doing, it's like doing the dishes. Huh. So you can listen to a podcast or whatever. I can watch a movie when I'm doing VFX. so I'll kind of power through a bunch of stuff and you know, it's there's always the old favorites that I have and stuff that I like to revisit, the comfort horror films. But it's just kind of, it's when I have the time and I can sort of slot one in, I'll just see what's, you know, popular at that time.
What are your comfort horror movies?
The Gift with Jason Bateman. I really love that film. The score is really great. It Follows, the score on that again is so good that just it elevates everything in that film. And it's just got a really unique style to it. I don't know. I like Oculus a lot. That's one of those ones that makes you feel like total crap after. It's got like the biggest FU ending ever. But it's just so well put together that technically it's just so fascinating to sort of break down. Like all the flashbacks, how they kind of, they're fluidly, they kind of go from present to past in one shot. It's just so well thought out. And he kind of brought that to Hill House as well. But I don't know. I mean, The Gift is, it's one that I just really enjoy watching just because I love Jason Bateman, I guess. That's what it is.
Is working with him on one of your movies like bucket list?
Yeah, I mean, that would be amazing. He's just so talented. I don't know. I mean, it's crazy because he's super talented in front of the camera, but he's also stupid talented behind the camera too. He's just like ridiculously talented. So I don't know. I mean, yeah, that'd be amazing. I can't even fathom what that would be like and what kind of stuff he would bring to a character that you create and stuff. Cause you know, that's the nice thing about getting great actors is that they have a viewpoint that they're bringing to this thing and they kind of put it on the page or they, you know, the unwritten stuff on the page that they're seeing and they bring that and you just sort of go, wow. And you know, they breathe life into these things that in a more three-dimensional way than you can do yourself. So that I can't even imagine what someone of his, you know, his caliber would do.
Yeah. Have you ever had any noteworthy experiences seeing a horror movie in theaters, good or bad?
I mean, the Blair Witch one for sure. That was a big one. I do remember when I saw Scream 3, I went with a friend and the theater was totally empty. And we were sitting at the back and right when the movie started, it was like this weird carnival music ad that was playing. It was probably one of those like turn off, or no, it wouldn't have been phones. It was before phones, but you know, be quiet, blah, blah, blah. One of those sort of pre-roll things. And all of a sudden the lights went out in the theater, like the projector stopped, but the carnival music went on a loop. And it was this really creepy, especially when you've seen Scream 2, all the stuff that happens in the theater at the beginning of that movie. You're just like, we're alone in the dark. You can't see anything. You just hear this blaring carnival music. And we're just like, this is terrifying. You know, this is awful. So we just sort of sat there waiting because you can't see. You're just like, and eventually it fixed itself and the movie played and it was fine. But it definitely you know, I was just like, man, that's just like, just, you know, a second, just like, boom, things change. You know, I mean, you think of something like the Aurora shooting, and it's just like how fast things can change for you. It's, it was just like this stupid thing that just sort of caught me by surprise. So yeah, that was one. I do find that when you go to horror films and theaters, I don't really enjoy it as much as I do watching alone, because a lot of the times you get people that are there to just make jokes, and I think what it is, it's like a defense mechanism. They don't want to be, they don't want to kind of lose themselves and get scared. So they put on this false sense of like, oh, these are stupid, you know? And like when I saw It Chapter One, I saw it on opening night on the Friday night and everything. And I was so excited because, again, the It miniseries scarred me for life. So I was looking for that kind of experience. And the people beside us were just like, oh, just making, you know, joking and stuff like that. And I was just like, man, like, it just sucks because I wanted to enjoy it, and it just takes you out of it. And I've even actually screened my own movies at film festivals, and I've sat at the back or something like that, and someone right in front is just, you know, whispering to each other and laughing, and you're just like, why are you even here? You know, like, what are you doing? If you're not here to see it and then take it in, you know, like, it's very easy to shit on a horror movie. It's very easy because everything is so, it's like a heightened reality. It's very rare that, you know, like, unless you're watching like an Ari Aster film where it's just very kind of subdued and everything. It's just, you know, you're there to kind of go along for the ride because it's trying to do that. It's trying to give you an experience and make you feel something and jump or whatever. You know, you don't even have to jump. It's trying to take you to a different kind of thing so you have an experience. And yeah, I've always hated that. So yeah, definitely just, I prefer to watch them at home.
That's reasonable. I love going to the theater, but sometimes you do get bad audiences.
Yeah.
So that sucks. Have you started going back to theaters ever yet?
The only movie I've seen in theaters was Tenet. And I hated it. And it was a terrible experience because have you seen it?
I haven't seen it. I will not see it. So don't worry about ruining it.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, I went with a client of mine that I was working on a commercial with, and we went and we were all just like, it was so loud and the bass and everything that like my ears hurt and I couldn't hear the characters talking at all. And I don't know if, I mean, I think it would benefit watching it at home where you don't have that just insane bass, but we were looking at, like, I was looking at the friend, I was just like, what the hell is going on? I had no idea what anybody was saying. Every conversation is just like exposition. And when you can't hear that, you have no idea what's going on. So yeah, that was the last time I went to theaters. I mean, it is definitely challenging when you've got three kids. And
yeah, I can imagine.
You know, so it's, but yeah, I mean, I've kind of got my own home theater thing set up. So it is a cozier place to watch, just sort of, you know, cuddle up and watch something as loud as you need it. And you don't have to worry about other people around you or whatever. It was, but yeah, that was weirdly the last time I went. I definitely need to go back though.
So there are a handful of horror movies that have yet to be released in 2021. Is there one that you're most looking forward to that might get you back to the theater?
Malignant, of course. That one, I mean, I feel like what's coming out after that that's not a digital release, because that's, I can't even think.
Antlers is coming out.
Okay. Malignant, I feel like released schedules are so like
Halloween
every
Kills.
Oh yeah, yeah, that'll be cool. I saw that one in theaters, so that was fun. The first one. I think Malignant's kind of the big one right now because that's just like in my face whenever I'm on Facebook or something. Every second ad is Malignant. So yeah, definitely that one. I know VHS 94 is coming out to Shudder next month. That's cool.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't even know what's coming out. I've been so focused, you know, finishing the film and everything that it's such like a vortex that you're lost in, especially because like I edited it. I did all the VFX. So I'm just sort of locked in until it's finished. And now that it's out, it's kind of press and things like that. I haven't really kind of stepped back to be like, okay, what else is there? You know? So we'll see. I don't know. I might be in Serbia next month. So we'll see. Buying a hotel.
So you might not have an answer for this, but what is your favorite horror film that you've seen in 2021 so far?
What have I seen this year? Oh man. I watched Dr. Sleep a second time and enjoyed it just as much. I really like that film. Man, I need to see Don't Breathe 2 because I loved the first one a lot. That one's out. Shoot, I can't think.
A Quiet Place 2?
Oh, I did see that one. I didn't care for it.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was, you know, it's well made, well acted, everything like that. I just didn't think it brought anything new to the franchise. Like, it kind of felt, the opening was super cool. And the way it used sound throughout the film, like, you go quiet and you go loud and stuff, that was really neat. But I didn't feel like we knew their weakness and stuff, and it just, the weakness never really changed. They found a way to solve it on a larger scale, but ultimately it was basically the same movie as the first one, from just, you know, let's be quiet and that's it. Just find the source where we can put a radio feed out. You know, it's cool. I, you know, it had a lot of great moments and stuff like that. I just didn't, it ended and I was just like, oh, I mean, it's kind of just the same thing. I didn't think it needed a sequel, but I mean, John Krasinski is obviously great.
Yeah. He's
another one of those, you know, Jason Bateman, talented in front and behind. So, you know, these powerhouses, I don't think they care what I think.
Are there any horror movies that you won't watch or that you won't ever watch again?
I probably wouldn't watch The Human Centipede 2 again. that wasn't a great watch. It's a really unnerving film. You know, it's all black and white. It's just such a dark, miserable thing. And it's those kind of like edgier horror films that are built to make you squeamish and stuff. Like, they're really light on story. Like something like August Underground Mortem. I remember back when I was in film school and I was kind of like craving like, oh, I want to get the grossest thing I can see. You know, I want to see the guinea pig series, Flowers of Flesh and Blood and stuff like that. And it was fun. You know, you get to see all the makeup effects and stuff. And then, I don't know, when you get older, you kind of lose that. But I saw films like a Serbian film, and you watch like just all of those films that are on those lists that are like the worst horror, you know, the hardest films to watch that I was just kind of tracking down. Usually you watch them and you feel like crap after. And so I probably wouldn't watch those again. But I don't know. I mean, I can't think of any just like mainstream releases that have done that. I don't know.
A Serbian film counts.
Yeah, that's a real bummer of a film. But I will say, it is shockingly well made. Like, it feels super polished. You're watching, have you seen it?
I have not seen it. I will not see it. I've read part of the Wikipedia page. I don't need to see it.
I read the Wikipedia first and I was just like, wow, I will never watch this. And then I was like, all right, screw it, I'm going to watch it. And I watched it and I was just kind of struck by how slick it is. Like, it's like a Tony Scott film. It's just so, it's so hyper real that the things that you read in the Wikipedia, they're just so detached from reality that they don't have the same kind of feeling that they would if it was done straight and seriously, you know, like it's very, very crazy, over the top, like Crank, that kind of stuff. And so when I watched it, I actually didn't hate it, because I was just, it's the things that you read and how they're presented. It's just, it's not like it's one of those things, like I was saying with The Shining when I was a kid, your imagination is making it way worse than it actually is. I mean, they're awful, terrible. It's awful stuff across the board, but it's just done in a way that it's hard to take it seriously, you know?
Okay.
I wouldn't recommend watching it, but
no, I'm not. I'm not going to. Thank you.
No.
I think that and Cannibal Holocaust are like my no-goes.
Yeah, I've never seen. I've turned it on and I've heard about the turtle and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So I just like, that's, I mean, it's crazy because it was kind of like the found footage film that started it off. But yeah, I've never actually sat and watched it behind just like, you know, skipping through and just to see the gross parts that you've read about. But beyond that, yeah, I've never actually just like watched it as a film. And that's another one that's just like, it's a bummer. You just watch it and you feel like crap.
Yeah. Are there any horror movies that you love that people generally don't like, or do you hold any unpopular horror movie opinions?
I don't know. I mean, one movie that I really liked was Orphan. I had read the Wikipedia of that one too, because I think my brother told me about the twist, and the twist is absurd, but when you watch the film, it totally works. Like, it's one of those things where, you know, the story's great. It's one of the, it's a house movie where you've got a family that presents itself as something that it's not. There are these cracks in this foundation, and the movie just sort of pokes at those cracks, and you have this character that comes in and kind of disrupts the normalcy, you know, and so you've got this happiness. And then this one thing, it's just kind of like this domino effect. You bring in this child and then, you know, just it just keeps getting worse and worse. And that I just cared about the character so much that by the time the twist happened, I even knew what it was. I was just like, that was so cool. And I don't think that that's an unpopular opinion, but I don't know. I mean, I never really heard someone talk about that in like such a great light, but I think it's a super cool movie. An unpopular opinion that I have is that I don't like the new It movies. You know, I would prefer the old miniseries ones because I felt like those were really scary, even though it's campy and kind of stupid in a lot of spots. But I felt like the new ones just sort of held back. It felt more like a Goosebumps movie than something super dark. Like it has moments, like the opening of the second chapter is super dark. It has the sort of the gay bashing scene, and it's just like makes you feel like crap. And to me, that's what It is, and that's what Pennywise does. And I just never got it again from that. Like it should just make you, you know, it should just be super dark and scary. But you know, super successful, super well made. It's another one of those things. It's just probably he probably had to like loosen up because it's for such a broad audience, you know. So you have to kind of make it a little more friendly to a wider release audience.
Yeah. If you could remake one horror movie, which one would it be?
Probably the It series, because I would love to take everything they had and have no studio interference and just be able to just tell the story as it is. And, you know, I think everything that he shot, everything's great. And there is rumors of the, you know, the longer connected cut where they do it right. I think that would help a lot, because I think the second one, another problem with it is it goes back to the kids again, because the kids were so popular. They're like, well, we need to have the kids. But it's like, but you already told their story. So you're putting them in positions that we already know they survive. So there's zero tension, because you're just like, I know they're going to get away from it. And then you've got this big googly eyed monster running after them. And it's just like, okay, I get to the adults, because that's at least new stuff that we're learning. It's just kind of like a retread for a lot of it. But if you take those scenes and you cut them in appropriately, and you know, you kind of start with the adults and you move move through, I think it would be a lot more effective. I just think, you know, having a giant Paul Bunyan statue is not very scary. It's just so big and feels like you're watching a Goosebumps movie, and which I love the Goosebumps movie, but it knew its tone and that's what it was going for. Whereas It is trying to be something, and it's kind of mixed. Like it's like all of a sudden it's a Marvel movie where you've got a quip after a scare, and then another time it'll be really dark, like the projector scene in the first one, and where it's like, oh my God, that was super scary.
Yeah.
And I love that. And then, yeah, it's just kind of like, it never really decided on which tone of horror it wanted to be. And that was the biggest problem for me, because I love the book.
Oh, cool. I haven't read the book, and I actually haven't seen the 1990s miniseries. I should track that down.
It probably doesn't hold up. If you don't have any personal history with it in the book, it probably doesn't work. You know, like if you can contrast it against the movie, maybe a little bit, but I mean, it's a TV movie, you know, from the early 90s. It's, it's especially, I mean, the first hour or 2 hours or whatever it is, because it's either 4 hours or 2 hours, I can't remember. But the first half is really good when you've got the kids and the adults. But the second half, it just goes into the kind of the awkward adult only stuff. And it's just the effects aren't there. And it's just not as good. But the first, I think the first half holds up well.
Okay, so I'll just watch the first half if I can find it. Mm-hmm. All right, my last question is, if you had to spend quarantine with one horror villain, who would it be?
Maybe Rebecca from Superhost. She makes great pancakes. And as long as you don't try and exploit her, I think you're going to have a good time. You know, I think she seems like she would be eager to please, and she would be just like super fun to hang out with. But I think the moment that if you're like, all right, you know, I'm getting tired of your act, you need to leave, I think that's when you have problems. So as long as you can appreciate her for her uniqueness, I think you'd be okay. I mean, because most villains, they're there for, you know, usually a singular purpose, which is to kill you, you know. When you think of just horror villains, I think about the big ones, like the Freddys, the Michaels, all those. Like, they're not chill. They're not going to hang out and watch a movie. You know, they're not going to make you pancakes. They're going to just, like, they're going to just chase you until you're dead. And that's not fun. I mean, you're already, you know, you're hiding from something already. Why add to it? So yeah, I think Rebecca's a good choice, because she's, until she doesn't need you anymore, and hopefully that's a ways off, She's just like a chill, kind of cool chick. I like her.
I would call her chill, but she seems nice as long as you don't cross her.
Yeah, exactly. So just, you know, bite your tongue, bottle it up, and watch horror movies to sort of diffuse the tension. That's great.
I never even thought that you would say Rebecca as an answer to that question. So that was awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today. This was awesome. No, do you want to tell everyone where they can find you on the internet?
Instagram's kind of the main one. I'm the Brandon Christensen, and I'm on Twitter too. I think it's the Brandon C85. You couldn't fit my whole name because I've got a long name. But just go, you know, you can subscribe to Shudder now. They've got an offer code Superhost and it gives you 14 free days. Check out Superhost. And while you're there, you can check out Z and Stillborn because they're also there.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Everyone go watch Superhost and Z and Stillborn. They're all awesome. That's it for this week's episode of Who's There. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Brandon, and thanks again to Brandon for coming on. I'll leave links to his socials in the show notes, and don't forget to check out all of his movies, Superhost, Z, and Stillborn on Shudder. And you can get a free 14-day trial with code Superhost. Again, we'd really appreciate it if you could leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, and you can follow us on Twitter at Who's There Pod, or on Instagram at Who's There Podcast. Or if you have any questions, comments, concerns, horror movie recommendations, or you'd like to be a guest, shoot us an email at hello@whostherepodcast.com. Until next time, stay scary and get vaccinated.